We define innovation as the transformation of ideas into impact. So that's a process definition. Lots of things have to happen, from generating the ideas to making them real and having the impact.
Eddie?
The way I look at it, innovation is a process. Most people confuse inventions with innovation. Invention is just one step, one event in the beginning of the innovation process. But it's a long process from an idea to having a product.
David?
I'd say innovation is thinking outside of the box and then having the persistence to bring the ideas that you found outside of the box into the reality that we all live in and making those changes happen.
Eddie, you mentioned that innovation really is a process, and that it's people confuse it with invention. And so do you then think that the word innovation is applied not enough? I mean, do you think that there's other ways that it should be applied?
No, I think people generally know. The definition itself doesn't concern me. And the aspects that do concern me, the process itself, that's very, very tough. Because if you're outside the box, it's against the flow of traffic. You're really fighting our culture. As we grow up, we're taught you cannot be different. And to get outside the box, you create enemies right off the bat, because you disturb the comfort zone of the existing environment. So you have to be tenacious and never give up, because people are afraid of change, especially if they make money. If you're trying to replace, let's say, oil with something that is sun energy, there are lots of people that are making money and they don't want you to do it. But if you believe in it and you do it, it's tremendous satisfaction. I love it. I just love it. But I expected it not to be easy. But we do need to change our culture. We've got to embrace changes, because the world changes all the time. The only constant on this planet is change.
Nina or David?
One of the challenges we have when we're trying to teach students about innovation and the innovation process is this whole idea of, okay, you can have all the creative ideas in the world, but if you do nothing with them, they actually didn't matter. So yes, creativity is important, thinking outside the box is important, but it's not like there's a paucity of ideas. Ideas are everywhere. It's grabbing onto the idea that makes sense and actually putting it into some kind of implementation. That means you're talking about change processes all the time. How do cultures change? How do organizations change? How do nations change? And that becomes a part of innovation. I think people don't think about at first. They think about the invention or the creativity. And it's great to say, yes, we want to have an impact. But all of the stuff that happens in between that Eddie was just pointing out on how do you get people persuaded to try a new way? How do you bring people to a different point of view? All of that turns out to be, I think, one of the biggest challenges of innovation.
David?
Something that Eddie said really struck me. He spoke about tenacity. And as a young entrepreneur, I find myself, and I think the most recent time was yesterday, someone said I was referred to as tenacious. And I knew the person who was talking about me, and it wasn't meant as a compliment.
Oh. Yeah.
But I think that's one of the interesting things that entrepreneurs or innovators or change agents, whatever you want to call them, have to face and deal with, is this concept of we all appreciate change. Everybody, if you ask them if change is good, they'll say yes, most likely. But when faced with it truly themselves, changing some way or something, how they do things, it's a different story. And finding out how to make people comfortable with change, I think it's really a comfort issue. If people are comfortable with change, innovation will flow.
Mm-hmm. Eddie.
I really appreciate what you're saying. I was lucky. I was born in Israel, and you had to innovate to survive. We had nothing. I was born before Israel. It was called Palestine. And when I was 7 years old, Israel became a state. And the same evening, fighting started. Israel had no army, no way of defending itself, so innovation was a necessity. And that's the mother of invention. It's necessity. When you have to have something, you're going to come up with solutions. And because I was born with this culture, I question everything. Why are we wasting water? And why are we wasting electricity? And there are so many things that we're doing because we never face having to do without it. But that's not how our kids grow up. Something happens to us as we grow up, and we don't even know it. They force you to conform. And that's how we're losing innovators.
Let's talk a little bit about what the measure is of when an idea catches on and how you know it's the right thing to move forward with.
When we look at innovation, you can innovate in many different ways. Okay, so you can be inside a large organization and still innovate. Entrepreneurship is a huge means toward making your innovation or your idea real. So a lot of people take that path in order to take their idea into the world. But the way you know if it's the right idea is you get out there and you start trying it. You talk to people about it. You build the prototype. You do the research. You figure out what's the next step, and you keep taking steps and learning from what the environment tells you so that you can take the next step and the next step and the next step. So I don't think there's a big magic to it, like there's some point in time where it says, that's the perfect idea, run with that one. I think it really is a learning process as well.
Mm-hmm. Eddie.
So we define sense with acronyms to the word sense. S-E-N-S-E. And the first letter is for simple. If you cannot explain your idea to a six-year-old, it's not a simple idea. And the second one is E, the second letter, which for efficient. Everything has to be efficient. Your time has to be efficiently spent. Your money, everything. The next letter is the heart. It's the most important one. And for needed. A lot of people having great ideas that nobody needs. In innovation, defining that there is a need is the most important thing. When I find a situation that doesn't make sense to me, is there is a need for something to happen. And can I solve it with my experience, the tools that I learned? Can we stop global warming? First thing is there a problem? And if you say, yes, there is a real problem, then it's worth trying to go through the other letters because it has to be all the things that I'm describing. So the next letter is safe. It has to be safe. There are lots of solutions that solve one problem, but they create other problems. And the bottom line in this society is it has to be economical. If it's not economical, if people will not spend their money to buy it, don't start with it. You're wasting your time. But if you meet all these criteria, then the idea makes sense.
Nina?
I would just add that it's sometimes difficult to determine if there's a need because going out and asking people if there's a need doesn't always get you that answer. We don't know what we don't know. We don't know what would be useful. So some of the really big innovations that have changed our lives recently, such as smartphones, if you'd asked me in the 90s if I needed that, I would probably have said, no, I don't need that. But then it appears, and it's like, oh, okay, I see how I can make myself more productive or have more fun or stay in touch better or whatever I determine those needs to be. But you can't determine it by asking someone. So then you have to do like Eddie says. Now you're looking for what are the problems and how could I solve them, as opposed to, say, doing a focus group and asking people what they need. So it's not a simple process, I think, to determine needs. It requires astute observation and figuring out what the problems are and how you can make a solution fit.
David?
And sometimes a lot of it is listening. A lot of people ask me, did you come up with the idea of community solar gardens? You were the first company in the country that did this. And actually, the answer is no, I didn't. And it took my mother telling me this idea for several months before I actually took it on. She said, well, we can't get solar in our house because we have trees covering it. So, but I still want to get solar panels, so how can I do that? Now, I was a little hard-headed. I should have taken it after the first time I heard it. But after I heard it three times from her and then I started talking about it with other people, you started to see that there's a need. But the actual idea didn't come from the entrepreneur. It came from the environment around the entrepreneur. And I think one of the other things, I don't know if we're going to start touching on, but is the community of innovation. And how do you build a community of innovation where entrepreneurs, creative people work together, have support systems, a mentorship program that helps facilitate this process? Because you can have an idea, but you need mentors to help you take that idea to the next level, to bring in experience from different areas, to actually make that idea, that impetus successful.
I think part of it is being an example. People, kids, don't see an example of success in innovation. They see it in sports. But so that's why we set up our place, to be an example of successful innovation. But it goes further than that. What we find, the longer they work in traditional places, the less innovative or creative they become. We got to a point where we decided we'll never hire anybody with experience. if they've got all these years of experience and they haven't created anything, it becomes negative. The team, one person that is negative will destroy any project. It's special culture to promote innovation. But that gets into another real key element, is self-confidence. You really have to have people that they believe that they can be right and the rest of the world can be wrong, and not worry about the rest of the world. If the rest of the world would have solved the problem, you wouldn't even be thinking about it.
You know, I want to go back to something that you were talking about, and I think something that you said, Nina, and you said, Eddie, can go almost hand in hand on the same topic, which is you don't know that we need it until we need it, which is how something like the iPhone comes around and basically shifts culture. And then on the other end of the spectrum, there's something like global warming, which is there's a non-immediacy sort of association with that. So I'm wondering how do you know that you're going to give somebody something they didn't know they needed, or how do you show them they need something that they're not necessarily thinking about?
And the ways I think of it are, one, there's something wrong here. There's a problem. It needs to be fixed. So I'm going to go after fixing it. But the other way is there's something possible here. There's something better. It's not a big problem. Nobody's suffering, but I see a way it can be better. And I think when you talk about ideas and how do you know what the need is, I think you can look at it both ways.
David?
Something that I've thought a lot about is just the gut feeling. Do you have a gut feeling that something's right, that it's something that people will want? Is it something that you want to do? Being impulsive and being okay with being impulsive and embracing that. I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of inventions that are out there are just somebody impulsively thinking about something and saying, I want that, I want to do that, I want to create that. And, you know, if you're talking about an iPhone or an iPad, well, I'd like to read my newspaper on something that I didn't have to throw away, and I'd like it to be available immediately. Well, you never would have thought about that. A lot of people wouldn't have thought about that, but somebody did. Somebody came up with it and made it happen. So what is that? How do you embrace that type of thinking? And I think there's some places where that's been done, Silicon Valley, Boulder, here in Colorado, and there's other places where that hasn't happened. But how do you create this culture of innovation whereby those ideas are supported? I visited Israel several years ago, and I think the whole country has a culture of innovation and change. I mean, cities, yeah. You know, the largest city, Tel Aviv, I think, is just this hub of innovation of young people with new ideas, and it's okay to fail because sometimes innovations fail. They don't always succeed, and it's embraced there. And how do you create cultures that promote innovation?
I think you hit on one of the really key things that has to be part of the culture, which is, what is your attitude toward failure? How do you deal with failure in an organization? How do you deal with failure? Somebody tries something and it doesn't work. If that means you get a bad performance review, if that means, you know, you get fired because you wasted company resources on doing something that didn't work, if that happens, then you're going to kill any possibility of a culture of innovation. So I think this relationship to failure is important in the culture. It's important in our systems, the larger systems, the societal systems we deal with. It's important for individuals. How are you as an individual with regard to failure? It ends up being a crucial element if you're going to build a culture of innovation.
How do you sort of reconcile some of these multiple forces that come in, either for, against, or neutral, but not convinced of your ideas, to get them to work?
I think the first thing you do is you build up a core of people who support you and give you open and honest feedback, because people will always tell you that your ideas are crap. And that's just a given. So what you have to do is find those people who do support you and who keep you balanced.
Nina?
So I'm going to agree here with Eddie that things need to be economical, but that has two sides to it. They need to also be valuable. So I will pay more for something if I perceive greater value to it, or I will pay less for something that gives me the same value. But I'm always considering the value. But what I think you're getting to with the risks and the reward and the who prevents innovations from taking hold and so forth speaks to size and rules or systems. Government's role, or where they have a role, where they don't. If you look at markets that can stay free, where people are allowed to experiment, where they can go try different ways of solving a problem, then the ways that make sense, according to Eddie's acronym there, the ways that make sense will tend to win out. What happens, though, is we sometimes get organizations that get really large, that get actually partnered with government, which is also really large at this time, that creates them a way to stay in place and resist change a lot. So we need to look to that. That's a systemic issue. So we need to look at, are we keeping the playing field the same for people? Are we favoring certain organizations over others? And for what purpose? For what reason?
Eddie.
Well, there are two sides to what you were saying. I'm going to talk about value in a second. But not all ideas are good ideas. But reality can get distorted. And so I'm okay with somebody saying, I have a better idea than yours, and I'm okay. That's great. Wonderful. So our egos and personalities get involved in our own creations. So I'm not against people killing ideas that should be killed. But the other is in value. That's a huge point that you brought up. It took me a while to realize we don't measure things the right way. It needs to be divided. I divide value into two parts. One is tangible. things that you can measure the economic value, return on investment. But I believe that the intangibles, things you cannot measure and put numbers on, are more valuable than the tangibles. You can do something that you cannot show how much profits you're going to make, but they're the right things to do. I gave an example. Do we have right to drill and take oil or gas out of the ground? People look at the numbers and say, oh, yeah, we should take natural gas out. It's cheaper. But they don't look at the other value. First, do we have right to do it? Does it really belong to us? And if we take it, how about our children and grandchildren, other generations? How about the pollution side? There are so many aspects that you cannot measure. That doesn't mean that they're not valuable. They're very valuable. So what we do in our company is we emphasize the intangibles, like how beautiful the place is. Is it inspiring for people? And a lot of people in business don't get it, that if people are excited about what they're doing, they're going to get more productivity. If they work on something that they believe in, they're going to produce a lot more. You've got to use what we call the right road. Keep your values. And if you keep your values, numbers will work themselves out.
I guess finally, the one thing that I'm really curious about is sort of a personal motivation. In the second part of that question is, where do you kind of see the United States in terms of innovation moving forward, and are we going to maintain our status in this way? And if not, what do we need to do?
What motivates me is I really like to use my life the best way I can to make the world a better world. That's a personal thing that I want to do. I don't want to just before I die to say I should have done this, I should have done that. Life is a gift, and you can waste it or you can use it. So I'm trying to do the best I can, use my talent, experience, to make the world better. And in terms of the second part of your questions about countries, United States, I wish there would be no countries, no borders, and no titles. We're all the same, and we have to take care of everybody. If we do, then everybody's going to be better, including us. This society is not mature enough to just realize that there's more in common between us and the rest of the world than there are differences.
Nina?
Well, I started out as a kid reading science fiction from a very young age, and I loved it because it seemed, most of it, to have a view of possibility and a view of expansion. So that turned me into a technologist, and I studied engineering when I started. And at that time, I believed any problem we created, we'd be able to solve with technology. Learned over time that, ooh, that may not be all it takes because of what happens, the risks, people being resistant to change. So I went and studied change, organization development, and social psychology, and what is that about, and why do people behave the way they do? So when it comes to innovation, it's the perfect marriage. It's the marriage of an engineering background, a business background, a change and development approach, and it was perfect. So the chance to help educate students and influence students in a way that makes them more innovative, more prone to going out in the world and making something happen like David has done, or like Eddie has done, that's just really exciting to me. I also think that we can't stop what we're doing. We need to be smarter about it, but to say, nope, no more innovation, or let's go back to some old ways of doing it without looking at current circumstances and what we can now do, I don't think that leads anywhere good. So I think we have to keep going, but be hopefully smarter about it, more systemic, more systems thinking, if you will, and think about all of the impacts. In terms of where we are as a nation and how we're doing, that's an inherently competitive view. That suggests that we can't win unless others lose. And I don't buy into that. I think that we benefit, our country and our people benefit, as the rest of the world gets better at innovation.
David?
I'd say for me, it's all about the challenge. It's about the challenge to change things. I've never understood the word no. My mother always joked that about whether or not I actually had ears on my head when I was hearing the word. But overall, I'd say I'm very optimistic to your question about innovation in the United States. But because of what I've heard so far just around the table, innovators are incredibly optimistic people because they're free to think about what can be and the challenge of making that happen. And that's the path that I think that we're all on. If we can connect with each other, connect with people in other countries, take down the borders, the trade disputes, why do we need it? How do we start breaking down those barriers, have people working together, and have people challenging themselves? So much it's somehow people seem to be motivated about challenging others, competing against others. But what about competing against ourselves to become better people, to do things in better ways? Like Eddie was saying, to make the world a better place by being a better person. How do we make that happen? How do we get to that place? And I think the answer to that is we're getting there. We're going there. I think it's a social evolution.